evening. They're going to lead us in the pledge also. We have Charles and Sylvia Collins of the Charles Collins Gallery. So if you would come up to the podium and lead us in the pledge and then tell us about the gallery.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, we've got the Charles Collins Gallery down here on...
You have to talk right into the microphone, then we can all hear you. There you go.
I'm not in showbiz. We've got the Charles Collins Gallery down here on the corner of 231 Morro Bay Boulevard. We just opened up. I showed up in Napa County for a lot of years. We had a really good gallery up there till the gallery owner died and things changed. Anyway, we wanted to find a place around locally, close. I have showed here in other places. I showed at Just Looking in San Luis for a few years and Artifacts in a few places. But we wanted our own place, so we decided to take the plunge. And we've got a little place down here. Mostly all my stuff. We do carry some other artists, but it's mostly just my stuff that I've done over the years. I was a commercial fisherman here. We've been here years. Back in the late 70s and 80s, me and Pop fished out of Morro Bay. And so moved on to do other things. I got my degree at Cal Poly. And I worked at Keith Neely's illustration studio over in Los Osos for a number of years. I actually did subbing in the area with the different schools for a number of years. So I've been around. Anyway, been working for a lot of years. And we've got a variety of different types of painting. I paint mostly Americana, which you'd call, and it's kind of the style that we have, that I use. This is called Hammett's World. It's sort of a look into what Dashiell Hammett might have saw in his day. Anyway, that's about it. If you got any questions, you know, it's...
Okay, and your gallery...
We need some paintings in here, though.
What are the hours of the gallery?
Usually 11 to 5. Sometimes we stay open later, and we've got an opening coming the 26th. It'll be from 5 to 8.
Okay. Great.
June. Yeah, 26th of June.
June 26th. Okay. We'll look forward to that.
This 26th.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, other announcements. I just wanted to thank everybody involved with the Mermaid and Pirate Parade. We had our third one last Saturday, a week ago, and it was delightful. We had 87 little mermaids and pirates and sea creatures, all the way from a little lobster in arms to some very scary pirates, and their parents also dressed up. So it was a good time had by all. And I definitely want to thank Dockside 2 for providing all the refreshments at no charge, which is just wonderful of them. And also Summer Cottage and Shark's Grin provided some of the prizes that were awarded. We had raffle for prizes. And I want to thank my mom, too, because she bought all the saltwater taffy for the goodie bags. So it was a delightful event. Had a lot of fun. If you missed it, hope you'll all bring your kids next year. Other announcements, we have a public meeting of the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee, and that's going to be on Wednesday and Thursday, June 2nd and 3rd, at the Avila Lighthouse Suites, the Point San Luis Conference Center in Avila Beach. And that's at 1:30 to 5 on Wednesday and 8:30 to 11:30 on Thursday. And there's also an afternoon session on Thursday and an evening session on Wednesday. So, again, that's June 2nd and 3rd. If you'd like more information, the number to contact is 1-800-439-4688. And I also have this up here if anybody would like to have a copy. And I think that's it for my announcements. Betty? Rick?
I see, Peter, I guess you're going to talk about the music festival.
I have something else on mine, but I...
Okay, so you can take my thunder. The only other thing is I want to compliment Noah for the community garden barbecue. It was great. We had a great time. A lot of people there, a lot of fun, great food. So good job. Enjoyed it.
Okay, Noah?
Yeah, thanks for coming out. I'm still burping up garlic. I chewed a bunch of gum before the meeting, so... luckily, fortunately, you don't have to experience that like my colleagues up here do. But we did have a great time, and thank you for everyone that came out and donated. It was an excellent event. We served over 300 meals, and the chickens didn't seem too perturbed by the chicken roasting that was going on right nearby. So with that, we've got a couple of items to update you on. The most important, I think, is our downtown enhancement project, the presentation that Cal Poly and the community members that worked on that outreach and those workshops that we had is going to be at the treatment plants. For the Air Pollution Control District, we had our last meeting focused on the off-road vehicles and the particulate matter levels on the Oceana Dunes. It was the second public hearing regarding that issue, and we came out of that meeting with basically two lines of action. One is for the APCD, the state parks, and also the County of San Luis Obispo as the three stakeholders to develop a memorandum of agreements and a plan to mitigate and address the particulate matter pollution on the Napomo Mesa. So that's one track, working as a coalition and together to develop that plan. The other track that the board adopted was a fugitive dust regulation inclusion that will incorporate the SVRA into our fugitive dust program that we're developing as a state-mandated program to deal with PM particulate matter across the county. So there's those two directions that we're going, and the regulation would actually give the Air Pollution Control District the ability to regulate and ensure that the fugitive dust is managed off of the Oceana Dunes. And that is about it, although I did want to put a little shout-out to the National Estuary Program. I had a catering project that weekend, so it was a little tough for me to attend as much of the State of the Bay conference that they organized and put on as I would have liked, because there was a really exciting array of different topics and panel speakers. Our Rec and Parks Department did a great job of hosting the event in the community center, and overall I felt like it was a really exciting event, and they did a good job considering the turnover that they've had at the director's position. They were able to pull it off nicely. Thank you.
Okay. Carla?
Yes, thank you for noticing. I just want to say that I probably was there a little bit longer, the State of the Bay, and for both days, and there were some very nice presentations about what's going on out in the Bay, about some a variety of things. I wish I had thought to bring the agenda. But it was specifically presentations about our very own bay, as well as some more general things, and it was very impressive, actually, with some very good speakers.
Cara,
good evening. Thank you. I have just a few updates. Next Friday, June 4th, not this week, next week, the Economic Vitality Corporation is hosting a workshop here in Morro Bay in conjunction with the Las Osos and Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. You can get more information by going to slowevc.org or probably by contacting the local Morro Bay Chamber. Morro Grange is having a barbecue fundraiser on June 18th from 4:30 to 7. Tickets are $8. You can eat in or dine out. And that's at 1340 Atascadero Road. And if you're interested in tickets, you can see me, or you can call Tammy Haas at 772-3358. Next Thursday, June 3rd, is Hunger Awareness Day, so mark that on your calendars. I know that some of the local grocery stores are starting their food drives to help support the program. Saturday, June 5th, at Del Mar Park from 11 to 1 is the dedication of the Jody Giannini Dog Park, and so everyone is invited to come out for that and bring their dogs. And June 17th is Morro Bay High School graduation, so it's almost there. Summer starting. And that's it.
Oh, okay. I think that's also the ride of a lifetime at Del Mar. Noah, did you have something else?
Oh, I just wanted to remind everyone June 8th is Election Day, so make sure you get out and vote.
I was going to say that, too. Also, I forgot, this weekend is Art in the Park, so please come out and see all your local artists. Okay. Staff reports. We have time tonight, so anybody who wants to say anything for the summer, now's your chance. Let's start with Joe. He's got his microphone on.
Certainly happy to. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'll start off with a little bit of business. Down at, on the Embarcadero Centennial Parkway is getting some landscape work done, and you'll notice that some of the turf's being eliminated, some drought-tolerant native plants are being put in. So we'll hope to have that work done by the end of the week. Special thanks goes out to Morro Bay Lions Club. They've continued to work on this building. This is where they meet. Recent project was painting on the exterior of this facility, and that was just complete. We've got some more landscaping and things in the works, so we always appreciate their support. One of my big items tonight is the Kids Club Kids Camp program this summer. Registration begins June the 1st, which is next Tuesday. You can register at the Morro Bay Community Center. The camp begins June the 28th, and it runs through August the 13th. 2010 does promise to be a very adventurous and exciting summer. We have California Outdoor Bill of Rights, if you recall. We passed a resolution accepting those, and we're basing all of our camp themes on the Bill of Rights. So we go from California to the Veterans Hall, and we also have recycling opportunities for park goers at North Point and the Cloisters. And we'll be working on getting some larger dumpsters out there in some big areas like Del Mar with a split dumpster and things like that. So if you're noticing more recycling bins out there, we are putting the effort, and we're asking the community to support those efforts as well. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Algert, how was things in the harbor?
Things are fine. Good evening. Maybe it's not the most cheerful news, but we are installing the pay parking machine at the Tidelands Park boat launch ramp this week. We will have it in place. The 30-day period for effectiveness of the ordinance that you passed last month is finally here, and so we will have it in place and start charging this weekend for Memorial Day weekend. Many people may have noticed that there was finally some activity in the scow, the large scow that's been anchored across from Great American Fish Company in the South T Pier. That project is commencing work for an eelgrass mitigation and will probably continue on for the next 3 to 4 weeks, contouring an area out there for planting of eelgrass. It's an Army Corps of Engineers project executed by a private contractor, AIS Construction.
And what about, I heard we've got some lifeguard stations coming in?
Yeah, well, so we were able to purchase some surplus state lifeguard towers at a very, very reasonable cost. Actually, we got them for free, because it costs us something like $3,000 to $4,000 to transport them up here. That's the ultimate cost. And these lifeguard towers cost $20,000 to $25,000 a piece new, the very same models. So it's a very good deal for the city. We actually were putting them on the beach today. At least one was on the beach, and they were working on the second one. So lifeguard service will start this weekend. It will be weekends only till mid-June. Then we'll start 7 days a week until Labor Day.
Great. Okay. Rob, closed session report.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Councilman on closed session on one item, real property transactions. They discussed two separate properties, the Chora Valley property and the water rights involved with those properties, and also the property at 699 Embarcadero Street and the lease terms and conditions for that property. As to both of these real property transactions, no action was taken, which requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay. Andrea?
Yes. A couple
wait a
of
minute,
things.
Wait a minute. We had a question for
A question for Rick. The lifeguard stations, where are they going to be stored when they're taken off? And what's the life expectancy on those? We're going to be able to use those for a few seasons?
Yes. We've been storing our lifeguard towers. We pull them off the beach in late September, October in our harbor yard at the end of the dirt extension of Embarcadero. I'm not sure the life expectancy. The state obviously decided that it was time to replace these. We've done some rehab work. They're structurally sound, and they had to be cleaned up a little bit. But they look pretty good to me, and I wouldn't be surprised here in our community we may be able to use these for 10 or 15 years.
Okay. Andrea, administration?
Good evening. A couple quick reminders for the public that we do still have the Notify Me module on the computer. So if you're interested in our minutes or any agendas, you can automatically register for that, and those will come to you as they're dropped into the website. We have had some great use of that. As well, we do continue to have a city newsletter on the web. We do it monthly. The May issue is coming out in a few days. We try to handpick a couple of high points that are things that are happening in the city, as well as special events that are coming up. Next year, it appears that we're going to be successful in getting Morro Bay High School to come and give us a monthly report. Their new president is a former Girl Scout of mine, so I think that she'll be reliable and be coming on a monthly basis to let us know what's happening at the high school. And I will tell you that to take her place just quickly, we sent 12 swimmers down to the state competition at Long Beach, and Morro Bay finished 6th overall for girls and 13th in boys. So we should be proud of our Morro Bay High School students.
Out of how many competitors?
I think it was about 54 high schools overall. So
it's really impressive. Yeah, it's great. Okay, and over here, Mr. Leivick.
Thank you. As Mr. Smuckler mentioned, the downtown visioning will be at the next Planning Commission meeting. That is the only item on that Planning Commission meeting because of the length of that. There will be three team presentations at about 20 minutes each, and then probably some lively discussion after that. So we didn't have any action items for our Planning Commissioners at. For the second meeting, we will be bringing back the GAFCO precise plan, so mark your calendars for that. Later on this summer, we'll be holding a public workshop with the Planning Commission on our sign ordinance to get more discussion and input on signs. Also this summer, Planning Commission and ultimately the City Council will be looking at the wastewater treatment plant EIR and permits. The annual creek maintenance, and with that, I conclude my update.
Okay.
Any questions?
And Betty has a question there.
I'll ask one. I got a couple of phone calls over the weekend about what happened with the signage at planning last week. And was the upshot that it's just continued, or was there a committee formed, or what was the upshot of that?
The Planning Commission continued it to a date uncertain, and we're suggesting to hold it as a workshop item at a Planning Commission meeting so that they can really get into depth and sort of dissect the sign code and take in more public comment, because that appeared to what was needed for that item.
So when it comes back this summer, will that be the workshop, or will it be a separate date?
That will be the workshop when it comes back. Then it'll, after the workshop, it'll go to a Planning Commission hearing for action, and then they'll forward that on to council for your review and ultimate approval.
Thanks.
Okay, Chief Pond.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just a couple of quick things tonight. I want to remind everybody once again that it's fire season coming up, and our annual weed abatement program is well underway. Our Fire Marshal Tom Prowse will be out on June 16th to start inspecting lots to make sure all the weeds are cut and cleared appropriately to make our community fire safe. Additionally, the state parks is going to be doing some additional work, completing their hazard reduction program along the perimeter up on Black Hill. So look for that going on between now and June 15th. I think everybody on the council knows, but maybe the city doesn't. I keep getting questions about the fire station project. Our plans and pretty much everything with the city is ready to go out to bid. However, FEMA did not accept the CEQA that was done locally, and did not accept the FONSI, the finding of no significant issue that the USDA had done for the city. So with those two things being pushed aside by FEMA, we're being required to do a full environmental evaluation, and that RFP should be going out. I read through it just a little bit ago. It's about ready to go out, and so that'll be going out, and we'll be on schedule to get a contractor to finish that evaluation, environmental assessment, and hopefully be breaking ground closer to November, December.
Okay.
And with that, I'll pass it off to our
Chief police. Olivas.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. I'm very pleased to announce that our newest officer, Stephanie Pippin, passed her FTO period of 14 weeks this Sunday, which was very good because we needed to call her in today on her first day off to cover for another officer who injured their back. So the timing was perfect for us. Thank you for the reminders about the graduations at both Del Mar and the high school on the 17th, and I'd just like to encourage everybody to be even more aware of the children and our young adults out there on bicycles and skateboards and scooters. We've been on an educational campaign for the helmets, and we understand, you know, it may be difficult in these economic times for people to get helmets, but we have several helmets at the police department, which we offer for free to anybody who can't afford one for any of their kids or young adults. And on June 7th, we have the Law Enforcement Torch Run, which supports the Special Olympics. which we're very excited to be part of. It's a big fundraiser. I looked up a little history on it, which was interesting. I wasn't aware of. In 1981, it was started as a grassroots effort to bring awareness and raise funds for Special Olympics. And now there are over 100 runs in 35 different countries with 85,000 officers participating that have raised more than $34 million. So that'll be June 7th. So we do have several officers, as well as our own city manager, who has agreed to run with us and participate in the awareness and recognition of Special Olympics. So we will have some officers with fundraiser sheets asking for donations, and I encourage you to make donations to them.
What's,
all the profit,
what's
the all the
route
money.
On that?
I'm
what
sorry?
Route? What route will they be running?
We actually start at on Main Street at the entrance to the state park. We come up Main Street, we go up Morro Bay Boulevard to Quintana, and we run out Quintana to San Bernardo Creek, and there we meet Cuesta College PD and pass the torch off to them. So that's our route. So I know Andrea could run a lot further than that, but some of us, we wouldn't be able to do it. So
I was going to say you're not expecting Rob to run very far.
Rob hasn't volunteered to run with us yet. And last but not least, Memorial Day weekend is upon us. There is a campaign through Office of Traffic Safety through grant funding for crackdown on DUI drivers, because it is a significant impact and raised level of awareness. We will be having a DUI checkpoint in Morro Bay on North Main Street Saturday night, and there are media releases that go out for that. It's not a surprise. It's not trying to trick anybody. It's an educational campaign, and the more awareness we can get out there, the safer everybody can be. So that, with that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, we'll start our public comment. Please come forward and limit your comments to 3 minutes, please.
Paid off. The second group is our wonderful residents and business owners. Boy, we put out the plea, and they have stepped up to the plate and made the necessary donations. They volunteered when we've asked for volunteers, and it's really been an example of collaboration. Also, I want to recognize a few of our major sponsors. First off, the Tourism Business Improvement District, the TBID. Very large and generous donation there. The Chamber of Commerce gave us a very generous donation and has been helpful in assisting us with the implementation and planning. Our city council members, out of your contingency funds, we thank you. And Tognazzini's did a wonderful fundraiser for us as well, Osaka Joe's. The list is very long. I can't go through all of them because I would leave a lot of people out. Lastly, I'll direct you and the viewers at home to our webpage. It's www.MorroBay4th, and it's the numeral 4, th.org. So that's MorroBay, the numeral 4, th.org. And we are still looking for volunteers. So we do have a lot of fun. This is a fun group. If you want to have some fun, get involved. Go to that website. You can sign up, or you can give me a call directly, 800-396-6910. We'll be putting out our little concert ticket cards. They've got a rundown of all the events on the back. You'll see these at all the hotels, restaurants, everywhere around town from now until the 4th. So again, thank you to our community for the support. This has been a lot of fun and very inspiring. Thanks.
Excuse me, Mr. Eccles, before you go, I think we might have a problem because I've heard there's going to be a hostile takeover of the Embarcadero that morning by cute kids on bicycles to start the event off.
An exciting change that we've got this year, or addition, I should say, is at noon at the Rock parking lot, we are starting off with the bike parade. And that bike parade, complete with police escort, will run from the Rock all the way down our beautiful new Harbor Walk bicycle trail, all the way down the Embarcadero, wind up at Tidelands Park, and then the festivities will begin at 1 p.m. at Tidelands. Thank you for mentioning.
Congratulations, Jeff. Doing a great job. I appreciate taking over the 4th of July and doing such a wonderful job of fundraising. So I'm Peter Candela, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and hello, Mayor, Council members, city staff, and residents of Morro Bay. For the last couple of months, I've been coming before you and giving you great responses that we've had successes with our marketing campaign. It is truly amazing how many requests for information we have been getting. And it's a direct relationship between the organizations that are actually putting it all together. It's the TBID, the Tourism Business and Improvement District, and the Promotions Committee. They put together the plan for the marketing, and then TJ Advertising implements all of the plans. The Visitor Center receives all of the responses, the massive responses that we've been getting, and handles all of the volume of the visitors as well as the phone calls. And the Chamber actually is liaison between all of them. Wherever they are needed, they respond to make sure everything goes smoothly. This is a well-oiled machine that is producing the largest and most effective return on investment that I can see than we've ever experienced in Morro Bay. There are just to this point in May, we have had received and sent out over 2,000 request for information. We call that fulfillment. 2,000 visitors have come through the door. 1,000 phone calls have been through. This is truly amazing. I hope that the council can see the importance of maintaining this high level of marketing that we have established. I also hope that you see the importance of maintaining a visitor center in the heart of the tourism area, which is the Embarcadero. This is where people come in. This is where we want to make sure that they're greeted and that their experiences are positive ones. Also, I would hope that we maintain our trolleys. I know this is going to be necessary because we're going to be overwhelmed with people coming in. I can't see any other thing happening because of these responses. We're going to have people come in. So I hope that you can see the importance of all of these things working together, keeping it at the same level that it is and not diminishing it in any way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Heineman, resident of Morro Bay, Mayor, City Council members, and TV audience. Simply stated, I am very concerned about the company MWH, also known as Montgomery Ward Hartsett, that the Morro Bay City Council and the Cayucas Sanitary District have chosen to design the plans for the Morro Bay Sewer Plant. I looked the company up on the internet, and this is what I found. In March of this year, the Root Candidates Forum, except for one person, Betty Winholtz, sometimes this attitude just isn't the best when you have to live with the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Barry Brannon, resident Morro Bay, mayor, councilpersons, and staff. My background is I have a degree in mechanical engineering and one in business administration. My minor was in economics. So big projects are always something I'm interested in. And while working through my way through college, I worked for a civil consulting engineer in Oregon. And our specialty was doing major public works projects for small cities in and around the Portland area. This covered design, layout, bid preparation, and supervision. Our projects were water systems, streets, and sewer development. After college, I was a design and construction engineer with Mobil Oil for 5 years and Conoco for 5 years. I was in their marketing departments on the West Coast. Later, I opened a contracting business using the same skills and developed that I had developed working for these major oil companies. Our firm had about 50 employees, and we were multi-million-dollar annual sales. Since the consulting contracts were started for this project, I appear before you tonight to ask that you re-examine the direction we are taking for this huge project before us, the wastewater treatment plant. Since the consulting contracts were started for this project, our state, our nation, our county, and our city have experienced the impacts of the largest downturn in economics for the last 30 or 40 years. Because of this, you have struggled to reduce the budgets with cuts in staffing, cuts in dial-a-ride, and elsewhere, only just to save thousands of dollars. Now there's an opportunity to save our city millions of dollars in the rebuilding of the state-mandated treatment plant. In 2006 and 2007, the city hired Carrillo Engineers to do a facility master plan for this once-in-our-lifetime project. After much study, they have come up with a cost estimate. Their report says that we can have a clean plant that will give us reusable water for about $36 million. That's $3,600 for every man, woman, and child in our city. This cost is only an estimate with no guarantee. There's presently a proposal being presented to the city as an alternative route. The PERC Water Treatment System has proposed a plant for a price not to exceed $20 million. By my calculation, this is a saving of $1,600 for every man, woman, and child in the city. This money can better be spent in our shops, in our stores, and in doing so will provide stability and jobs for all of our citizens. I know that plans have been made and money has been spent to get this required project this far. Most of the work is still valuable and can be used. However, before you continue down this path, I ask you to take a deep breath and at least give a fair look at the proposal that will be presented to you at the next JPA meeting. We know that there are innovative ways to do things, but please, please, please take an objective look and save our citizens from this wasteful spending. Vote to accept the proposal for a customized design report at the next meeting of the combined sewer district meetings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Bill Martini. And actually, here I'm here tonight to talk about D1, which is mariculture, ocean farming, and I just wanted to kind of go in lightly on it in that Morro Bay, as far as mariculture, was one of the largest oyster-growing producers in California. They were the biggest at one time. There's other options in the bay itself for mariculture, and I wouldn't want to see anything forwarded that would hamper mariculture in Morro Bay or the opportunity for it. We have some proposals and some thoughts on mariculture ourselves. But the world now is 7 billion people, and you can't rely just on wild fishing alone. In fact, mariculture brings in over 50% of the fish product in the world right now. I think it's up to 54%. And so you have to think very carefully on it, because 100 years ago, we used to go out and we used to hunt. You would pick, you know, the fruit and that. Now farming is about the only way for the massive population that we're dealing with. So I would say on D1, don't close the door. There's good mariculture. There's some mariculture that has problems. But think very hard before you support, you know, banning mariculture, a letter that would actually kind of stifle it, because there's so many rules and regulations out there right now that one more layer could just totally bury it. We had the ranch next to the abalone farm, and today they would probably really struggle to get that off the ground. This was the largest abalone farm in the world. They started the abalone business, and there's other opportunities, and I just, again, would hope that you would look at some of the alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and members of the council. It's always nice to see you. I'm John Scholes with Pacific Gas and Electric, and I'm here to speak on item A7 this evening, which is the Energy Watch Partnership. This is our, I wanted to come with some positive news and say to you, welcome to the Energy Watch Partnership. Participation in the San Luis Obispo County Energy Watch Partnership by the city gives you the opportunity to participate in the benefits of the program and to demonstrate your commitment to energy efficiencies. Currently, the partnership is managed by the Economic Vitality Corporation with Christine Rogers, who is here this evening serving as the program coordinator. Christine is behind me. These partnerships help local governments design energy management strategies and increase energy efficiency at your new and existing facilities. And I know that you've got some exciting new facilities hopefully coming online very soon. Through the Energy Watch partnerships, local governments and communities have the opportunity to join forces with PG&E and obtain access to services and programs to manage your energy efficiency needs. Specifically, the partnerships do allow cities and counties and governmental agencies to, one, increase the energy efficiency at your existing and new facilities, to provide, two, to provide a delivery channel for energy efficiency for services in the community, and finally, to lead the community in developing sustainable plans to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, create jobs, and increase renewable energy options. And as part of the Energy Watch partnership and as community leaders, you can think of your role in two ways. And the first is as an operator, and as I had said before, getting efficiencies in your existing facilities and new, and then also as catalyst for it, and that means adopting policies and programs that will allow not only the city but businesses and homeowners to go forward with these energy efficiencies. Just want to give you a real quick update, and I heard the buzzer go off, but this is good information.
No, it wasn't yours. It was somebody's phone.
That's someone's phone? I'm trying to be sensitive to your time. But PG&E Direct Installation Program, since January 2008 through April of this year, five city facilities have been upgraded, which has saved 15,540 kilowatt hours, which has had a project cost of about $3,500 and an annual savings of $2,331. So far, 51 businesses have been part of the program, which has resulted in 471,156 kilowatt hours saved, with project costs of about $97,000 and an annual savings of about $71,000. What this really means is the environmental benefits of this is there has been able to avoid about 768 tons of carbon dioxide emissions in the air, which is the equivalent of powering 71 homes a year and getting 37 cars off the year annually. So positive news this evening. And so we would finally like to just say to thank the staff and thank the council for bringing forward this resolution tonight. And as you take advantage of the incentives and programs offered through the partnership, we look forward to working with you toward our common goal of energy efficiency and the reduction of greenhouse gases. Again, my name is John Scholes. If you have any questions, feel free to give us a call. And I did want to kind of break from the script. Rather than walking to the back of the line and coming back up, I did want to say to Mayor Peters that you have done a great job for this community. I wanted folks to understand that who aren't necessarily with her when she is advocating on behalf of this community.
Thank you. I hate to cut you off, even especially when you're praising me, but it
absolutely.
Is time up.
Absolutely. But I know that you have chosen not to run, and I just want the people of this community to know that you have done a great job representing
thank you,
this
John.
Community, and good luck to the candidates that are running to replace you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. A couple things before I get into the meat of it. I attended the garden a gig on Sunday, and I chose in the vegetarian dish, but I think next year I'll stick to the meat dish. It was good, but I still like the chicken. And then I also attended that one the ESRAE program put on, and that's too bad that a lot of people missed it because it was a fantastic program. Rick was on the panel. Thank you. He was on the panel. He spoke well for our community and spoke well about the problems that we're having because they shut down the fishing. But most importantly now, a couple of weeks, here we go, June 8th, it's going to be voting time. We have two openings for city council. Number one, vote for Nancy Johnson. She's it. You can't lose without her. I mean, let's face it, she's works well with the city. Works well with the community. She's been here 14 years, and she's been on many, many committees. She's well-versed on how this city's going to run. So, hey, if you don't vote for it, bad news for you.
He's getting a little short time here now, isn't he? I just want to say it publicly. Rick is a guy with a huge amount of knowledge, and he's brought the city many good things over the years. And if there's no other chance to thank him, I want to thank him personally. Thank you, Rick. Grange Barbecue, you didn't mention there were tri-tips that we're going to have out there, so that's going to be good. And last but not least, many people in the community have received a mailing alleging to be from the Democratic voters of the Central Coast. That mailing is a totally fraudulent mailing. It is not authorized by the Democratic Party. It was a committee that was formed on April 23rd anonymously. And everybody on that slate, with the exception of one individual, denies all knowledge of that slate. All the Democrats have no knowledge of it. There is one candidate on there for sheriff who is not a Democrat who might benefit from people thinking he was a Democrat, and so his face is on there. Just a word of caution, if you got that nice little thing with all the little Democratic donkeys on it and all that stuff making it look like it's from the Democratic Party, it's not. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close the public comment, bring it back to council. All right, we have a very short agenda tonight. Do you want to take a break before we go into it, or do you want to just plunge on through? All right, we want to take a short break. and A4. Anybody else want to pull things?
I concur on A4 and also request A5.
A5, okay.
And I'll A6.
A6. Anything else? Okay, I want to entertain a motion approving A1, 2, 7, and 8.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Oppose? None. All right, A3 is the status report on water usage for April, and we're going to have Dylan give us this report, and we've also added a report on the wastewater treatment plant upgrade project. So we're going to be getting updates on both of those topics from Dylan every so often here.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I'll start out talking about the wastewater treatment plant, and then we'll dive into the water report. Wastewater treatment plant, the first task that we tasked our design consultant with was to go back through and review the facility's master plan. So basically go back through the document, the fine-tooth comb. The way we structured our RFP process is we gave all of the firms that competed kind of an open door, and we left the door open so they could come in, look at our project, look at what we were doing, and make recommendations to change it, to modify it, and to push the scope around a little bit if they thought that there were any fatal flaws or problems with it. So the first task that MWH was tasked with, it was to take that facility's master plan and review it. So they've been hard at work preparing a draft amendment number 2. We have that draft now. It's in the administrative review stage. And that should be coming back, I think, in probably July to the JPA board for review and adoption. So that amendment will come back. They'll outline some changes. They've been sort of citing the facilities in the plant, so it'll have some layout documentation to it. They've also been pushing some things around and some changes and refinements to the scope as they've seen fit. So that'll come before you in July. Following shortly thereafter, that's the document that's been holding up the EIR process. So we got derailed on the EIR about, I guess it's over a little over a year. I think it was April of 2009 when we ran headlong into the flood impacts. And so that process will be back on track here, probably draft EIR out in August or July of this year, 45-day review period to take public comments and then responses to those comments. That document will come back to you guys sometime this fall, then for adoption. So that'll come before the City Council. So that's a real brief sort of status report on the wastewater treatment plant, but we are chugging along. We're making good progress. And at a staff level, we're working through a lot of the issues between Morro Bay and Cayucas.
Could you also just add a little bit about the TAC committee meeting that we had?
Sure. We had a most recent TAC meeting was last week. We had a discussion where we reviewed definitions and talked through some of the concepts regarding the joint powers agreement. And we got in there and kind of talked about using definitions as a springboard to talk about some of the sticking points of our current agreement and then some methodologies and approaches that might help us marching ahead in the future. And I thought it was a very productive meeting. I thought it went well. And really sort of the feeling is that we have some good momentum going. For once, I think the TAC meeting was lighthearted. There was some laughing and smiling and an agreement and a recognition. Probably the biggest change that I've seen since I've been here was that Cayucas is admitting that they need to revise this document, and their approach and their kind of tact on it and their take on it in regards to cost sharing and how to structure the agreement. Water. The biggest news has been state water jumped up. We were at 20%. We jumped up to 30%, and then we jumped up to 40%. What was interesting for us, because of how the county's unused allocation is being divvied out, it actually wasn't a good thing for us to jump from the 30% to the 40%. It hurt us. And the reason that it hurt us is that the county has a maximum amount of water that they can deliver in any given month. So the way that the state water works is there's a Table A allocation. Everybody gets that. That's broken down, though, into a monthly maximum flow and sort of an instantaneous maximum flow. Well, at the 15-20%, using the county's unused allocation, we were able to peak more during the summer. So we could get more water in the summer. When that allocation came up, other agencies got more water because they didn't have the drought buffer that we did. And so they actually ate into our ability to peak a little bit. Long story short, though, it doesn't hurt us that bad. We'll be able to get through this summer. We have adequate water supplies. We'll be using our brackish water treatment trains as well as state water deliveries, and that should enable us to make it through our summer peak. The challenge, again, will be this fall during the state water shutdown, but we're in much better condition and position than we were last year, where we were scrambling to get those brackish trains online. So we've been running them. We've got some experience with them. We've also made some modifications to our system, specifically the addition of the ammonia injection that Rob announced earlier tonight, which allows us, without that system, we could only blend so much of our different sources before the waters would start to degrade each other. And by adding the ammonia injection ability here in the city of Morro Bay, we can blend state water with any ratio of our local waters and be fine. And we couldn't do that before. So that's something that really has been, we've been needing to do it since 95, since we got state water. And we finally got our operators comfortable enough with the system, got the system installed earlier this year, and now we're up and running with that. So that's been a significant change for us. I'll point you to the report. It's pretty straightforward. If you have any questions, I'll answer those also at this time.
Okay. Rick?
So when you say going from 30 to 40 hertz, is that because we have to pay for more than what we need?
It's not a payment issue. The way that it hurt us is that you go at 30%, because we have the biggest drought buffer in the county. We have the biggest drought buffer percentage. We're in pretty good shape in regards to our drought buffer. The other agencies in the county weren't getting as much water, so there just wasn't as much water available. We had slightly more available to us. And the way that we timed our extractions, we didn't take any state water from January till April. So we basically banked our state water, trying to maximize it for June, July, August, when we need water the most. As the delivery percentages come up, though, the total maximum that the county can deliver doesn't change. And so other agencies grew into that maximum amount, and they shrank our peaking ability. So we were going to peak some. We're kind of cheating the system a little bit, I guess, and now we can't do that as much. But we'll be fine. It didn't, you know, ruin our day or anything. It just we had a better deal at 30% than we're getting at 40.
Any other questions?
I do.
Okay.
You mentioned that because we have more of a delivery of state water, we can lay off the brackish and the desal for a little bit, and you're shifting your staff over to collections.
Maintenance work on the water system. They don't trade departments.
That's right. Excuse me. So it's about the water system going out, not collecting it in, but sending it out. So my question is, we've grown your staff to work with that facility, but are they not going to be there full time then?
Actually, with the water division, we've added, on paper, we've added one staff member to the wastewater collections department. I always get department division. I always get those two mixed up. So we've added, since I've been here, we've added one worker to the wastewater collections division. The water division has not added any staff. What we did do was we changed their certification requirements. And so we upped their base requirement for certifications. So now all of our staff are capable of running that facility, whereas before they were not.
So it's not new personnel, it's higher certification?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
And what that did for us, let me kind of, I'll take a moment and brag a little bit. But what that change did for us is, you go, we were able to run our desalinization facility from January until April using our staff resources. We had minimal outside help. In years past, we used GE consultants to do that task. They cost us about $1,000 a day. So you go $1,000 a day for 120 days. Effectively, that change saved the city in 2010 $120,000. So it's been a significant impact. And frankly, it's improved the knowledge level of our existing operators. It's kind of expanded their minds a little bit. And really, that ability will help them in every instance rating them. They're looking at the meter, they're looking at the service, and they're noting any errors. So there's a sort of the vintage model water meters. We're replacing those. And the reason you replace them is that as they get older, they register less and less. And so generally speaking, you recoup your cost of replacing aged water meters.
Okay. And on the service lines, are you deciding which ones you're going to do? Is it by video inspection or life expectancy?
Life expectancy. On the water service lines, those lines are anywhere from 5/8 of an inch to 1.25 inches in diameter. So you can't really effectively video inspect them. What we're doing is we're replacing all the ones that are made out of steel and replacing them with plastic. And our life expectancy grows for steel, it's about 50 years, and then for plastics, it's about 100.
Any questions over here? No?
Not a question, more of a statement. I just wanted to take a moment to recognize Mr. Wade and his department. Contrasting where we are this summer from years past in the last 5 years, say, it's a big difference. And there's just from last year alone, there's a lot less stress in the air about where we are, and in part due to the rain season, but also to the good work you guys have been doing. So that's appreciated, and I don't expect we're going to rest on those laurels. We're going to continue to fight for a more stable system, and just wanted to appreciate your work there.
Anything else? No? Okay. All right, then. This is just a file, so we don't need to vote on that one. And then A4, this is the resolution regarding the Measure Q funding, and we had a letter from Homer Alexander about this. Andrea, can I leave this to you to just explain the reason we brought it back for discussion?
Absolutely. There was a discrepancy between the resolution that was originally passed by the City Council in 2006, the language, and the resolution that was actually signed off and included in the which was actually accurate, but the ballot language certainly did not contain youth and park programs, and so we need to amend that, strike that out, and then we'll be consistent with the ballot language, and we'll move on from there.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on this, Noah?
Just at the top of the staff report, which I don't think is going to be part of the adoption, but measure in the third line there is lacking an A.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Any other comment on this one?
Yeah, just a clarification. I was assuming that we would just substitute this ballot measure and put it in place of that paragraph, but what I'm hearing is just to delete some words. Is there a preference, or because it's really doesn't say what the ballot says, and I didn't know if the intent was to have the ballot in there.
We can. The resolution does call for the ballot language of the measure as follows. We can certainly insert the ballot measure.
Okay.
I think it's similar, but we'll check.
Yeah. Okay. Just a little more detailed, I think, is the ballot measure.
Okay. So then I guess the motion would be to approve this with the
substitution
of the actual wording from the ballot measure.
And I would move that.
All right. Do I hear a second? Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Noah, A5.
Yes, thank you. A5, I just wanted to actually check in with the council on some of the language in here. Under the general funds accumulation reserve, the second point, at the end of it, it's talking about that we have a goal of 27.5% of the general fund operating budget, or a minimum of $2.75 million, whichever is greater, may be used for budgetary purposes. Once we've met that that threshold for emergency reserve above and beyond, can be utilized for other uses. And then going on to the – actually, not going on to the back, staying on number two, what I wanted to ask the council was when do you think we – or do you think we should develop a little more detail and development on that maybe used for budgetary purposes component? Do we want to be more specific about that? We had some ideas that were bantered about during the budget workshop last week, but we didn't get very specific there, go beyond just kind of I guess brainstorming. So,
did you have some ideas that you wanted?
Well, it seemed generally the ideas were focused on community investments, addressing project needs that aren't necessarily being addressed by Measure Q funds or our general operating funds. And everyone kind of came to the table with a couple different slants on identifying the best use for that. I thought it presented the interest, and the extension beyond the 27.5% presented an interesting opportunity to utilize those funds in a more focused way. And perhaps we as a council should give a little more direction on where we
And I guess, and if I, excuse me, Mr. Grantham, just finish up by saying I would also like this excess somehow delineated in the budget itself.
That's a good point.
So that when it comes to that, we'll see, oh, well, we've got this
right.
much or that much.
That
and
good.
So it would be marked in the budget as that.
Did staff get that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. Rick?
My feeling is if we specify things, future councils are just going to change it anyway. So depending on what the priorities are at that time. So I'm for not specifying either.
Carla, same thing? Okay. All right.
With that and the suggestion that, I don't know if that necessarily needs to be in here about pulling it out, delineating the excess beyond the 27.5 in the motion here.
Yeah, it could be that we'd like it as a line item in the budget so we can see.
Okay. I'll move to approve A5 with the addition that there will be a line item in the budget detailing the difference between the 27.5% emergency reserve and the excess.
And that's added to number 2? Like, could you extend that? Maybe used for budgetary purposes as line item in the budget or something?
I'd add it as a separate number.
Okay.
A separate number. That must just be
number.
Cleaner.
Okay.
As a separate number.
Okay, I'd second that.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. Betty, A6.
A6 is approving compensation rates for the extension of the MV transportation contract. And I laid on your desk, and I truly apologize because I've been thinking about it all weekend, what to do and not, and so I finally sat down when I had a little time this morning, and this is what my brainstorming came up with. If you have this handwritten note, and I didn't have a chance to check it with Miss Layton because she's unavailable, and I did talk to Miss Burlingame to see, you know, where's the faulty thinking, because I'm sure there is faulty thinking here, but I don't know where it is. And so what I did, because I'm still interested in saving Dial-A-Ride as is. And I don't know that you will approve that in light of the discussion at the budget meeting the other day, but I just had to do my last plug here. And the reason I feel like it's pertinent to this report, because it's about the contract that we're going to sign or approve tonight, and I'd like to see if that can be different. So what you've got here is I took the revenues that will be coming in for the next budget cycle, which is $400,000. But I used the expenses of last year because they include the Dial-A-Ride. New, 09-10 does that. And so last year we spent approximately $629,000. Let me take that back. This is not all Dial-A-Ride. This is the transit budget. This is the full transit budget, which includes Dial-A-Ride plus the bike and the other things that we have to give to Slocog and other places. So excluding the trolley, I took out the little bit that they will bring in and the amount that we would spend on it. And I'll deal with that in a second. So everything but the trolley is included here. Basically what it says is that we have expenses of about $731,000, that there's revenue of $426,000, which is obviously why staff came up with an alternative for us, because we have a hole of $300,000. We can't come up with that money. And so what I noticed, and which this is the stuff I haven't been able to check with Ms. Slayton, is that there was $130,000 to the good at the end of this coming year in the budget, if you'll notice it on our page in our budget. So if that's available, that would be a piece. And then there's $124,000 in the general fund accumulation fund that I want to spend. And so together, that brings the total down to $51,000 only that we would need to keep the Dial-A-Ride as is. Now, the sale of one or two of the trolleys may not be available to help compensate for some of that $51,000. The other question I had was the overhead, or what we send back to out of the enterprise fund to the general budget, actually raised this year in transit, and all the others went down. So there may or may not be a few thousand dollars there to play with. But I didn't know if that was close enough where the council would be interested in trying to keep the Dial-A-Ride for another year as is. Now, And you can say, well, this is one-time money. Certainly the general fund money accumulation is. Certainly this balance of 130 is. But as we have done for the last 4 or 5 years with the budget, we've always pushed, you know, how can we save ourselves one more year, one more year? So I was trying to look at how can we save Dial-A-Ride one more year. The accumulation fund actually will have a $200,000 to the good next year proposed. We'll see if that's true, but that's what Ms. Layton's suggesting as a projection. So I'm thinking if we
give us our money back. So for me, no, I don't want to spend the money on it.
Noah?
Yeah, I have that same concern to go ahead and utilize these funds for one more year, not knowing if we're going to be able to then continue it on. I'm really hopeful that the effort and the energy right now can help focus us on developing that community volunteer-based program to fill in, because I think Ms. Borchardt's right. Most likely the state, looking at the situation that they're in with the budget, is going to be grabbing for more and needing more rather than less. And I'm feeling the volunteer option is really the best long-term stable option for us. Although I hear what you're saying about potentially postponing our decision, at least until we hear from Ms. Layton on this, and then also so it's in line with our adoption of the budget and that discussion that we'll have at the next council meeting. I'd be interested to make sure that there's not, if we do postpone this vote tonight, I'm sure it's not going to be comfortable, but as far as the timing of that contract, what sort of impacts would have that would have on the process.
Rick?
I always refer back to the Dynergy dependence, and it was Ms. Slayton's ambition to put $100,000 away this year and two next year, and to make it so when we get cut off, it's not going to slap us too hard in the face. So this is part of her plan. I've already discussed it with her. I'd love to save Dial-A-Ride. It's a great service, but the money is not there, and I can't support that.
Well, and I tend to agree. I know where you're going, but I think I really do believe that that flex route is going to work. And plus, we are still talking with the county about this regional thing. I don't know if it's going to work out or not, but we'd know by next year whether it does. So I'm not in favor of taking this money away this year. Given, I mean, we've been very lucky. We've been very lucky to get a balanced budget. I don't want to risk it. I want to keep it safe.
Yeah, and this doesn't really take from anything. And I think that needs to be clear. And I think the excess money in the general accumulation, in my mind, and you know, I'm the tightest-fisted person up here with money. But if we have said this is our minimum and we have that extra amount, let's spend it on something that's of service to the community. And I don't see it as an emergency piece of money. It's there for us to use in some way that we're not able to, you know, satisfy another service. And so that's why I think it's okay to spend it, whether it's on this or something else. I think we need to spend that $124,000.
Well, I think I'd like to see us get into the budget year and see where we might need to spend it. But that's the other thing. It's not enough anyway. So
no, but
it doesn't
it
cover
be.
What you want
it
to cover.
It could be if we combine that with $130,000 and maybe something
no,
else.
It can't. So. Even with your figures, if they're all right, it doesn't.
Well, but
it's still $50,000 short.
It's only $51,000 short.
That's and a lot of money.
But that can be supplied with some of the trolley money that we're going to
okay. Well, I think we've got a majority here that doesn't want to do this.
Yep.
So if you want to try a motion, you can do that. But
I don't think it would be worth it.
Okay. Then I would move approval of item A6. Any more discussion?
Yes.
Yeah. Carla?
Of course. Of course there's more discussion. Is this going to include what any parameters of what we're doing for the trolley service in this?
Is it going to?
I mean, are we just going to go out and run three trolleys and they're going to run the same schedule they did last year when we approved this contract?
That's what's in the budget. Yeah.
Well, you're raising that because did you want figures today about that?
Yeah, I was hoping we'd have an idea of where we might be able to curtail some of this so that we aren't running at a negative again this year by looking at some of the possible hours that we could shave off that were. Ms. Burlingame gave us some numbers at the last meeting, but when you take those numbers of the ridership, I'm just throwing it out there because I don't remember, and I apologize. It was like 3,000 riders on Monday, but if you break that down over 15 weeks and you break that down over three trolleys and you break that down over all the hours, it comes out to, you know, maybe five riders here and seven riders there. So I at the very least, I'm not supportive of running three trolleys anyway, so at the very least, if that's what we're going to have to do, I'd like to see if we can find a way to cut some of the hours that were non-productive, I guess.
Okay, is this contract including, I mean, do we have to have that discussion on this contract, and can we have that discussion on this contract, Rob?
Yes, my understanding this item is just for the compensation rates, and if you wanted to change the trolley service at any time, you can still do that as part of your contract, but the rates might then change, but you could still bring up the trolley service, and you can correct me anytime, but this is just to establish the compensation rates.
And that's mostly true. This is just the fixed cost and the variable cost.
After all that. Okay. We have no public hearing. Yay. We have no unfinished business. So now we go on to new business. And we have one item of new business. That's consideration of sending a letter to Congressman Kapp opposing farm fish legislation. Betty, this is yours.
Also, I passed out to you another sheet with a longer list of supporters who opposed this piece of legislation, and I know that we all received a packet from Coast Keeper and some things apparently of supporters on the other side. And so what I've done is I've highlighted for you on the list that I gave you the ones that are actually commercial fishermen organizations. The others are, I'm not sure, it's hard to say. Some may be environmental clubs, some may be just educational groups, conservation groups, and so I just wanted to point out that there were commercial fishermen groups that were opposed to the legislation. Let me say for the public, what this is a letter to Congressman Capps regarding farm fishing legislation that she has proposed for the Congress. The reason I'm bringing this up is because of the legislation, and I think that the documents that we got in our boxes today actually outline the problems with this kind of agribusiness, and they talk about fish. And this, let me clarify, this isn't about. And I appreciate the comment earlier from the public about this isn't about shellfish. This isn't about being in the bay. This is about being out in state waters, in deep water, where we're talking about finfish. I guess is that how you would say it best? It's not hard shell fish. So it's about capturing fish and having them in cages out in the middle of the ocean. And that the risks that have been identified here are that they escape, that they carry diseases and parasites, they alter the nutrient and habitat area, they affect predators, the drugs and chemicals that have to be shot into the water in these cages obviously don't stay within the cages, the ways that they may or may not interact, and then the socioeconomic impacts on local fishermen, people that. So what I have here in the staff report basically says that there was a company that proposed that down the Gulf of Mexico. They've had some out in Hawaii. They've been characterized as not necessarily successful. The one in the Gulf of Mexico was proposed and then didn't go forward because the kinds of requirements that they're looking for have been not easy to attend to because there are no guidelines. And so the fear is that if you do a legislation that does the guidelines, that says how it will be, then you're actually streamlining the system and it makes it easy for corporations to come in and start setting up farm fishing. And so the idea here is to don't even go there, so we won't even start that. You know, if we think that this could be a hazard to the environment or to our economic base for fishermen, why would we go and try to make it more efficient for someone to set up a business like that would compete? So basically, it's perceived as a slippery slope. there's no oversight for that. Certainly that's built into it, but who's actually going to go out and do that with all the, you know, constraints on the government these days? And so the idea is that maybe we're just not ready to start this process. So the letter that I drafted is very mild. It doesn't even speak against it. It's more of a cautionary letter, and I'll just read it because it's brief. It says, Dear Representative Capps, thank you for all you do for our community and the coast. As a coastal community that supports its fishing fleet in the midst of dire times, we write to urge you to do more research before submitting this legislation in support of ocean farm fishing. We understand that your intent is to be proactive, setting parameters for a potential industry off our coast. However, we are not convinced that this legislation is the direction to go at this time. We are not convinced that this is the best interest of our fishing fleets. In light of the concerns reported from other locations where ocean farm fishing has been tried, moving cautiously is the best interest of the fishers, the consumers, and the ocean environment. We support your interest in doing the right thing. We urge you to seek out more information, to talk to more of those who fish, and to consider all possible consequences. And thank you for your consideration. So more, it's asking her to lay back a little bit and not push forward.
Okay. Rick, did you have any input on this that you've been able to garner from fishing organizations or anyone?
So the question, the information we received today from Mrs. Capps' office was some additional things that I haven't looked into this very much, but I think she was asked to introduce this legislation by a varied group of environmental and fishing organizations, and that's listed in one of the correspondences we received today. And they were spurred on by the Gulf Management Council. So one of the six or seven regional management councils did approve a fisheries management plan last year for an aquaculture program. That led to a lot of concerns that the aquaculture was going to be permitted on a case-by-case basis in the fisheries management councils. This group's a very, very large mix of groups asked Mrs. Capps to introduce legislation like this. Food and Water Watch and a number of other folks have taken a position in opposition. I think they note in the staff report that they have sued NOAA over the approval of that fisheries management plan in the Gulf Coast. So my reading between the lines is they must feel that their lawsuit will prevail and there will be no process then at the regional councils. And so they would prefer no process for approving aquaculture, offshore aquaculture, versus what Mrs. Capps has introduced, which would have a pretty regulated precautionary approach to approving offshore aquaculture.
Okay. I don't know if anybody else talked to people, but I talked to Jeremiah O'Brien today. Our local fishing organization has not taken a stance either way. They feel that it's still in the process, and I did talk to Jonathan Noah's Capps aide in Washington today, and he said that the bill as is, it's been introduced for discussion and for work, but it's not going to become law. There's no vote pending on it. It's simply up there out right now for discussion, and it was meant to focus discussion because of this fear that these kind of aquaculture projects are just going to appear willy-nilly, and each one's going to be judged on its own merits without any comparison to how the other one was judged. So there wouldn't be any consistency in the regulation, and that was the concern. So they've been having meetings apparently for 4 months and literally 8-hour conference calls and things like that with all the stakeholders trying to come up with a proper mode of regulatory rules on this. So it's not closed yet. It's still in the works. It's still being researched. It's still being adjusted. And I guess my concern is with the letter, I'm not sure we should do anything, number one, or if we do, I'd rather send your letter without the second paragraph so that it's not, and I know it is a very mild letter, But even the second paragraph talking about that this legislation is not the direction to go at this time, she has brought it up. She brought it up for because people urged her to. So I'd rather not criticize her even mildly for the legislation because she's trying to do the right thing, and she's always been very responsive to our needs. And so, you know, if you wanted to weigh in at all at this point, and I'm not sure it's the right time to do that, but if we did, I'd rather do it without that second paragraph. So that's my feeling on it. Rick?
I'd like to commend San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper for the report that we got this morning. It's not often that you get a report from someone that shows both sides of the issues, and they did, and I emailed Gordon Hensley and thanked him for this. I wish I'd have got this a week ago. And like you were talking about the difference between the oysters and the abalone, they're not really known to escape, you know, their areas, and that's kind of a different deal, and I agree with you. But, you know, this did bring up a lot of issues with me. And I was somewhat surprised, I guess, by the ambivalence of our local fishermen and the people in the industry here. Talked to Rick Galgert briefly about it this morning. I think the letter is very logical. And after hearing what Janice says about this, I would go ahead and support this. And I think I would go along with the deletion of the second paragraph. I think we're saying all we need to say with the first and the last. But I think we should support it, but we should support it in a way that we get all the facts, and that's what we're trying to do, and that's what you're saying by your letter, and I appreciate the work you did on that. So that's how I'd go with it.
Yeah, thank you, and I'd like to echo Mr. Grantham's comments. As I started reading the staff report and reading some of the correspondence that we've received, I was thinking to myself, there are a lot of details to this that are still being hashed out, and it's a pretty complex issue. So I was thinking, hopefully the letter speaks in that tone and really is more focusing on a precautionary approach and encouraging caution moving forward. And as I read the letter, I realized that's exactly what she had put together. So I'm appreciative of that. Overall, though, I think the information from my research and what I've seen in the aquaculture industry, especially in the open ocean environment, is one that is very troublesome for a community that is based more on wild, healthy runs of and fisheries. And so I think we if anything, should have some comment to that in this letter. I'm comfortable with the letter as is. I think you're being clear about encouraging Mrs. Capps and her office and the people working on this to be very careful. And my suggestion was that the last sentence here, we support your interest in doing the right thing. We urge you to seek out more information, talk to more of those who fish, and consider all possible consequences and their impacts to the integrity of our environment and wild fisheries. I felt it was important that we ended with wild fisheries as the real key to this because, yes, onshore or on land, aquaculture has shown some promise to help us address some of our food supply issues and do it in an environmentally responsible way. But so far, what I've seen is the offshore aquaculture is just a really damaging industry to those wild runs that are the sustainable runs that we've depended on for so long. So that was my comment.
Well, thank you first, Ms. Winholtz, for writing this and taking the time. I appreciate it. And I would agree with the addition to that. I support the letter. And the second paragraph, to me, really, if you were just not wanting to question her legislation rather than deleting the whole paragraph, you could just take out that first two sentences, and it still addresses the concerns without putting it towards her legislation. I think that's really what your concern is. Yeah. And I don't know how you'd feel about that, Betty, just taking out, you know, the legislation part, the first two sentences,
right.
Starting it in
yeah, that'd
of
be
the
fine.
Concerns. Would that be all right?
It's better than nothing.
Well, I know.
It, yeah.
Well, I mean, she's trying to do a good thing.
Yeah. Right, but we just don't know if she's getting the right information.
Right.
Well,
right.
And that's why I think just removing the legislation part and just... Yeah. Thank you.
And they are still doing the research. They are still talking to stakeholders. So if nothing else, this letter puts us in as someone who is interested and wants to be kept up, you know, maybe be included in the conversations.
I know. When you say stakeholders, this is a subject that we're all stakeholders in.
That's true.
We're all going to be affected by this legislation if it goes through one way or another.
Yeah. So, right. And I don't know who she's talking to in California,
right,
that are the fishermen.
Right. Well, and I think the San Luis Coast Keeper, it was this one that had a whole long list of people. Who was this from? Alaska Fishermen's Association, Marine Conservation Council. I know there were some California. I didn't copy all four pages of
I read that
letter,
too, and I didn't see, and it's interesting because they do have in both, I guess it's where the different sides are concentrating mm-hmm. their efforts. Like this one's really from the Gulf,
right.
And I think the other side's actually from
coast,
Alaska and the Northwest,
yeah.
And there weren't a lot from California.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and maybe that's something that we could add to the letter, you know, that we hope that you would do more input from California sources as well.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Thank you. If you're referring to the November 9, 2009 letter, I did note on there that Duncan McLean, A Half Moon Bay, Zeke Grader, Pietro Paramano, there was some California signers onto that letter.
Okay.
And some of those environmental organizations also are based in, mm-hmm. are very active in California that are listed there also.
How about with
they were
Noah's
listed on the CAPS list?
That's correct. On the letter to Lois CAPS requesting introduction of this legislation.
Thanks.
We could even say, since it's from us, if we're adding NOAA's wording and their impacts to our California environment and wild fisheries, or West Coast.
Yeah, and their impacts to the integrity of our environment and wild fisheries.
Okay. Or West Coast. Do you want to add West Coast in there? Would that work?
So what we're adding is, and their integrity to our...
Their impacts to the integrity of the West Coast environment and wild fisheries?
Yeah.
On the... Oh, you said the word West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How's that? And we take out the first two sentences in the second paragraph. Okay?
Yeah, I just... one line paragraphs kind of... So would you just combine those last two sentences?
Sure. Yeah, you could do that. Okay.
However, it structurally looks better.
Okay.
It is the Tutorine and me. So I would move approval of this letter with the changes that Mr. Smuckler made.
Sorry. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Golly. It's not even 8 o'clock. All right. Noah, you have the closing quote.
Closing quote, and I pulled...
Do we give...
future agenda items.
Oh, yeah.
I always forget that.
Jeez,
I get so
excited.
Okay, future agenda items.
This isn't new, but I'd like to know when the committee's being formed on the fire thing that we had talked about. It's on the list. I'm sure it's taken a back seat because of budget items, but I'd just like to bring that up to the front of our burner again. The fire subcommittee. It's already on
yeah,
the agenda.
Okay. It's just when to bring it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think Chief Pond is gone, but I think he did a little bit of research on whether or not there was really going to be a committee formed or not. There was some conflicting information. So he's got that, and we'll bring it back to the council, maybe in a form of a memorandum for you to look at and go from there.
Okay. Rick? No?
One, just to check in, because I don't think we mentioned it directly at the beginning of the meeting, but the second, I guess, part of our budget discussion is planned for the next council meeting on June 14th, and Ms. Luker had some information about how that might be formatted.
We did. We're going through the notes about some of the things that council wanted to come back. In particular, one was the trolley. There's a number of other things, and we feel like we can certainly bring those items back for the budget discussion on June 14th. I think I put in my update that we don't particularly feel it's necessary to have another budget hearing on the 2nd of June.
But we will have time for discussion on the 14th for those items. And I've got a kind of a laundry list of those things, and I think that that'll give us ample time, certainly reserve some time on the budget for those.
With room for public comment?
We can put that as a public hearing if the council felt that that was the way to go, certainly, or unfinished business. Either way, public hearing probably would be best.
Okay, and then the other, at the last round of interviews for our different advisory boards and specifically the TBID, there was some concern and discussion about the composition of, mm-hmm. of the board, the TBID board, and how things could be broken down as far as number of rooms and the representatives for those different designations. So I thought it might be good to check back in and get some more direction.
That's a good reminder. We were planning on, though, at least taking it to TBID first if you'd want to see what their recommendation is as to their membership, kind of like we did with promotions and looked at their whole bylaws. It's been a year, and so maybe they should relook at their bylaws and see if there's any recommendations for changes. And this would be one of them on the makeup of the different, if that's okay. If not, we can bring it right back to you guys.
I just didn't have TBID's ideas on it.
When's their next meeting?
It's the third Thursday in June. And the makeup is currently representative of what's happening, if that makes sense. So nobody's out of place at this point.
Okay.
So I think we'll be okay.
I know there were some concerns with adjustments that we were making. One of the board members might not be able to sit any longer.
Right.
I don't know if we're addressing.
And currently they're fine. That certainly might happen in the future, but currently it's adequate. So if we take that to the meeting in June and bring it back to you, perhaps the first meeting in July.
I guess that'll work.
Okay. Carla, anything?
Well, it's probably more of a housekeeping request. In light of the conversation of the budget and the vehicle requests for a pool car and a police car, and last year was a harbor truck and a sewer sucker, whatever, for better lack of better term. Sewer sucker. I don't know what it's called. Evac truck or something. What I'd like to know is if we could get an inventory of the city vehicles.
That's great.
And I know it could sound difficult, but actually probably because we insure them all, there should be a simple list somewhere, and just a little bit of what department they're in, and, you know, police has umpteen patrol cars and some crossovers, and if that would be possible.
We'd be happy to bring that back. It's something we have available in a memo form. Does it necessarily need to be a staff report?
Okay. Memo form, and possibly before the budget, so we could look at the vehicle requests. I know. One more thing, huh?
Well then if we're not just looking at numbers, don't we also want to look at usage? So is there another piece of information?
Well, it would be the vehicle, the department, what it's used for.
I think it's going to be pretty clear when we bring it back. But staff will be here to answer any questions you have if you've got them when we have that document.
All right. Anything else? Okay, Noah, closing quote, please.
All right. I did poll the council before the meeting to find out. I had an idea about reading my favorite passage from the novel Pride, or my favorite chapter from the novel Pride and Prejudice, but they didn't want to go through that, so I have a simple quote for us tonight. Volunteering is the ultimate exercise in democracy. You vote in elections once a year, but when you volunteer, you vote every day about the kind of community you want to live in. And that's unknown.
Perfect.
Make sure to vote on June 8th, though.
Absolutely. Those are volunteers, too, believe me, and they need your support. We're adjourned.